Good morning again. It's 11 o'clock, June 13th, 2018. This is the administrative portion of our meeting. We have one item on the consent calendar. I move approval.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
We have, I'm going to just jump down to number C, the scheduling matters. We have one request to add scheduling of a work session regarding amounts levied in consent agreements, or at least amounts levied. Is it about consent agreements specifically or on one call case?
Policy guidelines.
I think we would have it on consent agreements, right? Because when we actually have a case that comes before us, we would decide it at that point.
Policy guidelines.
Just possible.
811 fines.
811 penalty guidelines.
Policy guidelines related to 811.
Something on that order. Okay. That's number two on scheduling then. Discussion. Number one is next era decommissioning plans. I'm going to just call on Jerry Lean.
Thank you, Commissioner. We had a work session on those decommissioning plans from NextEra. There's about 10 of them there, something like that. And there were late filed exhibits that came in afterwards. And so the reason we're on here is to just make sure that the commission's happy with the late filed and to figure out our next steps. If you remember, there were four late filed exhibits. One was road miles per project of access roads for wind farms for next eras. And two was an examples of what their contractor, DEMCO, has already decommissioned. And so they gave brief descriptions of some of their projects that they've done. Three was examples of next era of decommissioning projects or repowering projects. So there were two or three of those on there that they had listed. And the fourth one, there were some questions on the Wilton decommissioning plan as to what the numbers were in there, because they had been different from the other plans that they had filed. And NextEra looked at it and basically revised the Wilton numbers to the same as the others. So that was Exhibit 4. If there's no questions or anything further on those, the next question is what to do going forward. And I think that Jack from Legal would like to approve the decommissioning plans individually as they meet the requirements of the rules for decommissioning plans, and save the financial assurance approvals until we're sure on what kind of form those will take. So that's the rundown on this. Questions?
I thought the late filed exhibits were enlightening. I particularly was sort of surprised by the number of miles of all those roads. That's a lot of miles of roads.
Some were more than others, depending on how far apart the turbines are and how many turbines there are.
But otherwise, I thought the information was helpful, and I don't need any additional work sessions or anything to discuss about the decommissioning plan, but I am curious what, can you walk through the splitting of the decommissioning plan and the financials, Jack, and what you're envisioning there, and what the timeline might be on that?
I apologize, Commissioner. I missed what Jerry was saying when I was briefly speaking with Alana.
He said that you envisioned approving the decommissioning plans separately from the financial assurances.
Yes, Commissioner. The way I view the rules that we've written, They're two separate requirements. Ultimately, the financial assurance is based off the decommissioning plan cost estimate. However, due to the timing, they don't always necessarily have to come in at the exact same time. And these decommissioning plans can be approved, in my view, separately from the financial assurances, and as we're still working through those.
Do we have the financial assurances on these, and what's the timeline for their getting those approved?
Sure. We had a requirement to have the financial assurances filed, and they have actually filed those financial assurances. So it is just subject to commission approval at this point. And of the 13, I believe, Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there are 7 that actually were required to file financial assurances, and they have. And so now I've had discussions with Alana regarding this matter, and I think we're currently working on that to ensure that the financial assurances will be operationally the way that we want them to be. And we've been working as well with coal reclamation, and I think we've also been working with risk management as well.
So did we talk about that at our work session, the financial assurances, or do we just do decommissioning plans?
I believe they filed it, so, and it was open for discussion at the at that informal, but I don't think it was really a major point of discussion since we were still working through it at that time.
Okay. So what do you anticipate coming forward with a plan, setting up a work session, what an informal just on the financial insurances? How do we tie that one up?
I think with regards to the financial assurances, when staff and Alana are agreeable to the financial assurances, we'll provide them to the company. If there is an agreement, then we'll probably need some sort of more informal or formal discussion with the commission. But if it's agreeable to the commission and it's agreeable to staff and the company, then I don't envision that probably another formal or informal hearing will be necessary, unless the commission chooses to have one.
I guess how we know it's agreeable to us? Sure. If we don't have some sort of a meeting to discuss it.
Oh, we would bring it forward to for your approval, just as we would jurisdictional determinations and other things. So you'd be aware of
it.
What the final financial assurance form would be.
And the amount of the financial assurances is going to be it is going to be based on the decommissioning plan. So when you're talking about that, you're still working on the financial assurances part of it and coming up with something that is acceptable, you're not talking about the amounts, correct? You're talking about the form that it is and making sure that it's something that we can, in fact, capture under various scenarios and that sort of thing. As far as the amount of financial assurances required, that will be determined by the approval of the decommissioning plan, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's how I understand it.
Right, but whether they're allowed to self-bond or not, I mean, those are pretty big decision points.
Absolutely, Commissioner, and that's something that is you would have the opportunity to not find agreeable, you would not be agreeable to as well, but we will submit something to you.
Okay.
Well, that's fairly spelled out in the rules, too. If you meet certain standards, then you can. And if you don't, then I presume you can't. But I guess I'm thinking that your issues that still need to be resolved on the financial assurances are detailed legal wording to make sure that we have something that we can collect on if we need to, and that both sides are clear on what the circumstances would be where we would pursue that and where we would, in fact, collect.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, and as well as not just our standards, but as well as the state's requirements as well.
And you're working with risk management and also consulting with the reclamation folks upstairs on their training and experience in these regards, right?
That's correct, Commissioner.
Yeah, we're thinking that actually we would, in the best world, we would develop a form like reclamation has a form. And then the companies would all have to be on our form as opposed to trying to analyze every company proposal that comes in and for the fine print issues.
I really think that's a good plan and is the proper way to go instead of continually reinventing new contracts.
Do we have a deadline where we have to finish this? I mean, they filed them, but how do we tie it up? Was there some time frame where we had to get this all done or not? And let them know that they're good or they're not good or they need more work?
Sure. Normally the financial assurances for a new facility would need to be done, I believe, within 60 days, some sort of approval. I may be wrong about that. I have to double check. But for the purposes of this one, there isn't really anything specified in law time-wise for our approval. So there isn't a, of course, okay. Sooner the better. But there's nothing specifically required in our rules to comply with time-wise on these financial assurances.
Because these are existing facilities.
These are the existing facilities that have not in operation past 10 years.
Okay. All right.
I was going to say, too, getting back to the original point, whoever brought it up first, as far as the roads issue, and I'd requested that, it's really interesting, depending on how one of these is designed and with some of the more recent issues as far as concerns from the environmental community about fragmenting of land. You've got wind farms from the same company that have nearly a mile per turbine of new roads. And I think there was one that was even under 1,000, but several that were right around that 1,000 foot per turbine. Wow. There's a difference in how these things are. Mm-hmm. Are planned. And does that give you the clarity you're looking for, Jerry?
I think so, yeah.
I think what I'm hearing is we're kind of ready to look at a proposed order on accepting the decommissioning plans.
I was thinking a motion might do it, but we can bring it to you in some form. I move the commission to approve the plans.
A motion versus an order. Mm.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Okay. Okay. Okay, number two, then, the request for jurisdictional determination from Dakota Natural Gas LLC in the Pembina County case, 18-196.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, we recently received a request for jurisdictional determination by, I think they were called Dakota Natural Gas LLC, looking to extend service distribution system from the Viking transmission line across state lines to serve a large end user customer near Drayton as well as the surrounding Drayton community. And they requested a jurisdictional determination as to whether they would be required to come in and get a site certificate under North Dakota Century Code 4922.1. And Pat and I spoke with this and spoke about this, and it has a lot of similarities to the MDU winter line. It taps into the Alliance pipeline, and we ultimately determined if the commission is agreeable to our conclusion that this was not a transmission line and this was essentially a part of a distribution system, therefore they would not be required to come in for a site certificate.
Does that change at all when it comes across state line versus being within the boundaries of North Dakota?
There are complications with regards to the operations of this distribution facility and pipeline. Normally, natural gas pipelines that cross state lines would be subject to FERC siting jurisdiction. However, there's something called a Hinshaw exemption that would allow them to essentially be subject to our regulation if FERC agrees to it. That's what they're opting to do. They believe that it'll be less cumbersome, and so they're requesting to be regulated by the North Dakota Public Service Commission ultimately, and as well as they also requested to not be subject to the Siting Act.
I support your guys' conclusion and particularly like the line where you say that as long as a large volume customer does not resell gas, the commission agrees that the Drayton line is functionally an equivalent to a distribution. So I think it's I think it's good. And it's good news for Drayton that this is happening. That's the big picture. It's a really big deal. Do you know who the customer is, the large customer?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's American Crystal Sugar. And it's still in the preliminary stages. They're trying to just discuss the feasibility of actually extending service at this point to Crystal Sugar as well as the Drayton community.
Yeah, that has a dovetailing on Julie's comments. That has a huge economic impact, positive impact to the plant.
Does American Crystal have a plant in Hillsboro, too? Do you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And that one's coal, and from what I understand, they're committed to keeping it coal for the near future anyway. So, interesting.
Does Dakota Natural Gas have other facilities or business in North Dakota?
Mr. Chairman, Dakota Natural Gas does not have any other businesses in North Dakota at this time. However, they do have fairly extensive operations in rural communities in Minnesota.
The one thing that concerned me, and it's more as a citizen maybe than as a commissioner, but I know different states have different laws and rules regarding road right-of-ways and whether the, in some cases, state highways are built on easements, and in some cases they've acquired the land from the landowners. And when this company is planning on putting this pipeline in the road ditch, I wonder if, I hope they're aware of whatever the laws and rules are in that area before they get so far down the line. If it was a siting case, we would, of course, catch that. But with finding it non-jurisdictional, I hope they're aware of whatever the circumstances are up there, because I don't know what the circumstances are on the particular roads that they're talking about.
Not to belabor the point, but call before you dig.
Okay, does that conclude that? Then number three, Otter Tail Power and Minn Kota under voltage load shedding to meet NERC transmission planning standards. We're back to you, Jerry.
Okay. Otter Tail and Minn Kota up in the Langdon area operate a automatic low voltage load shedding scheme that they have they've done this for since the early 90s, and if they're in a position where we're on peak load and they lose the Drayton to Langdon line at a time when the Langdon wind farm is not producing anything, then this load shedding will invoke and they will lose both Minn Kota, Otter Tail, and some MRES load automatically. There's a NERC transmission standard that had some changes to it a couple of years ago that set forth the way that these things are modeled and come up with, but the idea is that you have to handle your biggest single contingency without losing customers. This enables them to meet that standard. If
the load shedding plan allows them, okay.
Yes. If they're to meet that standard without this load shedding plan, they need to conduct build another transmission line. That would cost them, I think, in the neighborhood of $21 million and would have no operational benefit to meeting this standard. And so in the standard, there is a requirement that the regulatory authority not object to the use of the standard.
Use of the load shedding plan, you mean?
Yeah, of the load shedding. And so I have here a stakeholder feedback request from MISO that is a pretty simple form. And I would fill that out and turn it in. The stakeholder feedback section, I just said, the North Dakota Public Service Commission has no objection to the continued use of undervoltage load shedding to meet NERC TPL compliance at the Langdon and Henson 115, 69, 41.6 kV substations.
Do the customers that will be shed, do they know about this?
You know, that I don't know for sure, but I know that there's no hospitals or factories or anything like that that are on the list if they are on the circuits. If there would have been, they would have been required to have backup generation anyway because they're not guaranteed to have absolute service. In this case, during the last 10 years, this has only been invoked once. When the load is at such a point that it might get invoked if they had these faults occur, it's only like 8% of the time on the absolute peak days. And if it did get invoked, they envision that they'd have service restored like in less than a half hour again, just to get it going. So I don't think there's any real noticeable customer impact under it.
But we know there's not a, or you know there's not a hospital, but you don't know if there's a citizen there that has some kind of a machine that they need for daily living or something like that.
No, we don't. But like I say, this has been in place since the early 90s already.
This kind of went a different direction than what I thought it was going to. Can you go back to something you said earlier on, pretty early in the discussion? I thought you said that NERC requires the worst-case scenario to be able to be met without load shedding, but now you're saying if we approve this load shedding plan, then we don't have to build the transmission line. But doesn't that the opposite of what you were saying that NERC requires, or did I misunderstand?
They didn't say without load shedding, but they don't want the system to go down. So if you can...
But it's okay to go down if we say it's okay to go down, or...?
It won't go down because they will shed this load. Those customers will be without service for a little while, but the system won't go down. They could lose the whole substations there and have a blackout, and that's what you have to avoid.
So the system is still operational, but
yeah,
there's no power being delivered.
To these customers, to those circuits that they shed.
So it's an outage, which I think would be construed as if you're a customer, it went down. But
yeah, an outage. And,
technically,
you know, outages happen. I mean, they're not guaranteed outage-free services.
But I think there's a difference between not being guaranteed outage-free services and being the one who has been hand-picked to be the one that gets shed when there's trouble. And
yeah, no, there is a...
concerned about us determining that and those people probably not even knowing that they're the first on the list.
I can check and see if the customers are aware of it. I'm guessing not.
I think we heard about something similar to this in the SPP territory in North Dakota as well. We had heard about a contingency scenario where they had planned to shed load. I don't have that level of detail. I kind of know the town areas. But that was their plan as well, is to shed load.
Have we approved that?
It wasn't really an approval. It was more of them just telling us about it.
This isn't an approval either. This is that you don't object to it.
So by not doing anything, you're approving.
Well, you're really slicing hairs today, Jerry.
Well,
now, Jerry, has legal looked at that form yet? Has legal reviewed the form?
But... that's what it says in the standard, that there's no regulatory objection. And so, I mean, that's different from an approval. I don't know how much, but a little bit. It
doesn't seem like we're 100% sure on exactly who would be impacted.
Well, it would be, I can tell you the size of the impact.
Right.
For Otter Tail, it's 3.9 megawatts out of the Hensel substation and 2.1 megawatts out of the Langdon. That's for Otter Tail. Minnesota Dakota Power's impact's a little bigger. They're going to have 35.7 megawatts out of Hensel and 9.7 out of Langdon. And then MRES has 4.3 megawatts out of Hensel.
So you're 50, 60 megawatts there. I'm guessing I wasn't adding them up from the beginning, but...
It is.
It's a pretty substantial... Is that all the North Dakota portions?
Well, it's all North Dakota. It's Langdon and Hensel subs. So they're bringing power. And there's two major supply lines that come in there. One comes from Devil Lake to Langdon, and the other one comes into the Hensel sub from in Minnesota. And those are 115, and the loss of one of those at the time that there was no power coming out of the Langdon wind farm would cause the event to trigger if we were during a peak load condition, which is, and it would have to be a significant peak load. So the chances of it happen are low. And like I said, it's only happened once in the last 10 years.
It's funny, these scenarios don't come up when we're citing additional intermittent generation sources.
They come up in the modeling that they do for transmission planning for the area and the NERC requirements and what's modeled.
Well, I'm sure going to want some legal evaluation and advice on this before I'm willing to say that I don't object to it.
Okay. MISO asked for feedback by the 15th. So, I don't know what legal would say or would have to say about it.
When did they ask?
It's been ongoing. It was a subject in the last transmission planning sub-regional meeting that happened on the 1st of June.
Well, if we miss the June 15th deadline, I don't imagine they're going to start on June 16th because it's a Saturday on construction of a power line. So I'm guessing we have a little more time than that.
So
I want to know what I'm getting into before I say that I'm fine with this.
Have they been doing this, though? I mean, it's not new. This has been going on.
Yeah,
so
this practice has not, been in place.
Yeah, it's not like we're...
With the new standard language that's in there, it requires that it be reviewed and that the Regulatory Commission does not object.
So we could, I suppose, not... give them anything. We don't have to give them that form, do we?
I don't think we have to. I don't know.
I mean, I don't have a problem with
it. But they don't allow them to do it if we don't give them the form.
I see. Well, yeah, and then we're having them spend $21 million on a line that doesn't improve service. So.
Legal, I want to hear some thoughts on that.
There's probably some time for review. I mean, if they violate the standard without the waiver, there's probably a turnaround time before the NERC gets after them. And so I personally would be more comfortable looking at the form and looking at the standard and probably then saying, oh, yeah, Jerry, you're right. But so I personally would like to review it, and I think you probably have a little window of opportunity.
Well, can we delegate... We delegate our authority to you guys to do that so we don't have to have another meeting upon review.
I'm guessing the next meeting is going to be fine.
Either that or if Alana says it's fine, just say that I can give it to him.
I'm not taking responsibility for it. Jack's the PUD lawyer.
I'm fine with saying if legal doesn't have an issue with it, then we delegate authority to PUD to sign the form and get it to MISO.
I think they can wait a week.
I think it probably can, and I also think you should have a regulatory authority decision, at least the first time. So it should come back to the commission, I think.
There should be
a motion as opposed to just a delegation.
Yeah, we have to the 15th.
I move the commission not object.
23rd.
What?
Today is the 13th.
Yeah. Or
today is the 13th, so we've got 2 days.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell MISO that we...
Our next meeting is the 27th.
Working on it. We won't meet on June 15th. They have no choice but to take it. Yep.
Jerry, will you do that in writing?
What?
Like by email, so we can track it.
Oh, to MISO?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Anything else on that?
Just for the minutes, we're delegating.
The legal's going to analyze it and bring it to the next meeting.
Staff review and next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Then we're to scheduling. So I put out a list of 9 proposed meeting dates, starting with September 26, which would be 3 weeks after the previous one, so whatever that must have fell to the 7th or something.
Oh, wait.
Like that.
I'm sorry. I had one more item I wanted to have on discussion.
I always get this mixed up. What was it when we can't add something to discussion?
Special meetings.
That's special.
Okay, so go ahead.
On the emergency commission request, which we've already approved, I don't know if that means that we've approved all the language that was included with that, like the appendix or part E, the narrative. But I just thought whoever's going, are you going down for that meeting?
I don't think I even have seen what you're looking at.
It's included in the consent. It's on. It's attached to the consent motion in the consent file. BK2C-BK2.
Oh, that for some reason I never got that till like 10 minutes before we came in, and it was just the motion that I got. So I did not see that.
Oh.
But go ahead anyway.
Okay.
I've been wondering too how that works.
Yeah. Well.
We've not done it since I've been chairman. So.
Yeah. So there's this application that we send down there, and it includes this narrative. And I think the narrative is pretty important because that's what the legislators, I'm assuming, would read before the meeting. And so they'll be teed up to ask their questions based on this. I think that the narrative, if I was a legislator sitting there with not a lot of knowledge about what we do and how we use these funds, I would say, you use $175,000 to process this case, and you need more. So I think the narrative needs to include more information about how we use the $175,000.
Itemize it.
Well, or just include some why it was so complicated, what sorts of evaluation was done. Just a paragraph. I'm not saying volumes, but right. A paragraph of information about how the original funds were used and why that project used so much.
I think giving them a general breakdown of here's where the fees go,
right.
Outside consultants, and giving them a general
overview,
I think it's a good idea.
And because I did the last one, the only other one that we've done since we've been here of these, and it's not a slam dunk. I mean, they don't like doing this.
Right, yeah.
So it's definitely they want to know what the heck we're using that money for.
I'm glad you brought this up because I forgot to, but I've been wondering too. So I know with administrative rules, if they're kind of mundane type, commissioners usually haven't gone down there when there's been something more noteworthy in the news than we have. I've gone to one of them. On these emergency commission meetings, was there something when you went that was really topical, or does the chairman traditionally
well,
go to
it
the
it really commission? Wasn't at the time, but it ended up being something that was very topical. It was Dakota Access, and we asked for $100,000 more for the construction inspection, which was long before all of the protest movement, et cetera. It was, you know, 8 months before any of that hit the radar. And there was pushback from Carlson on providing that additional funding for the inspection. But in the end, they agreed that it was for a good purpose and that we need to make sure that the reclamation was done appropriately. And the third-party inspectors were important to that cause. So they went along with it. But I was there, and I answered questions.
And so since we didn't know how that was going to turn out at the time, I presume you went just because we were to the emergency commission.
Yep.
And so then...
And we don't do this very often.
Following the same pattern, I should...
I think you should.
Do we know when it is? The emergency commission?
June 27th, I believe.
Okay, well, so the request, and it, I haven't read that yet, but it sounds like it's very correct, that we need to update this narrative to explain how the funds are used in more detail.
And also how the $50,000, generally speaking, would be used,
yeah.
How we came up with that number.
So it looks to me like Jill probably wrote most of this and did this application. And it makes sense because it's more just focused on the dollar amounts versus how the money's used. Or did you do it, Pat?
I wrote the narrative.
Okay.
And then I helped with the motion and
okay.
a little bit on the letter, and Alana reviewed it. Fortunately, I did have the numbers in it before, and so it's going to be easy to put them back in.
Okay.
It had numbers for the cost. For different costs like ALJ, the
sure.
Right,
the council, you know, cost for council, and also for the consultants, and then what those costs look like for the future.
And I voted on a lot of things that came out of the emergency commission, but I never sat in an emergency commission meeting. Are they something that is each agency that has a request has a time slot and it stays kind of on schedule, or what? That's the day of our next commission meeting, and we have an informal that afternoon.
I think it was. It was in the governor's office conference room, and I think you do have a specific time. It took maybe 10 minutes.
So I'll plan on going, and
OMB does a lot of talking, too.
Okay, and yeah. Will you guys know what the request is for the revision of the narrative?
He does.
And we'll contact them to try and get a time slot that allows me to get back for the meeting and whoever staff that goes to it.
Since you're the one going to be down there, I would make sure you work with Pat to get the narrative the way you want it, because yeah. you'll be defending it.
Protocol is for the chairman to go to that.
Yeah.
Chairperson.
Correct.
Just a note that the paperwork needs to be at this Secretary of State's office by the 21st. That's when it needs to be submitted.
I was just asking because it sounds like it's only happened once.
Well no.
Not in my memory.
I mean, they've had more than that, but since we've been here, we've done it once.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to throw out, I would have no problem.
I've presented twice to the Emergency Commission when I first started here. It was delegated to me to do that. No one was the ARP request, which again was more for funding authority, was a grant. Then the other one had to do with additional funding authority that we were looking at. But so I've been down twice for on behalf of the commission.
If two commissioners are going or three, just let us know so we can notice it.
Notice it. Yes.
Only one's going. That's fine. Two.
I think it's appropriate for the chairman just. to speak on behalf of all of us in defending it.
I would sit in regardless, I think.
Pardon me?
I said I would sit in regardless.
Okay, so we'll notice it. It's fine.
I think it makes it look like a bigger deal if we send more of us. So unless you're dying to be there, I think it would be better if we didn't all go. Because they're like, oh, geez, this must be a big controversial deal there.
We have time.
Where they're worried about it.
We have time to think about it.
That's fine.
I don't think this is. I think because of tax reform, the dynamics changed significantly out of our control. And I think this is very easy to explain.
I agree. I just think that for those guys, if two elected officials show up to sit in on the meeting, I think it makes it seem like we're worried about them approving it or not. And I think I agree with you. It isn't something that should cause alarm by anybody.
It does raise eyebrows.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, scheduling. So I won't repeat it all. Those 9 proposed meeting dates where I kind of left off. The first one follows a 3-week interval, as would the one on January 9th. The 3-week interval in September is almost an extension of we kind of typically do some of those in August. Plus, it allowed us to get on this other set of weeks, which allowed us to miss a lot of other conflicts. If we did it starting from the beginning every 2 weeks, it seemed like we'd almost every time be hitting against something that looked problematic to me. The only two that are not on Wednesdays are the 8th, basically being the day after the election, and there could be some distractions there. So putting it back one day to Thursday, and then the 20th, moving it ahead one day to leave the Wednesday before Thanksgiving open.
I see only one potential conflict, and this is getting out a bit, but it would be on January 9th. Isn't that potentially, based on the responses I looked at on the survey that was sent out for the NARUC, was it the NARUC commissioners only meeting or
Mark?
The MARC?
MARC.
And I believe those, I guess I don't have it in front of me, but weren't the, wasn't the 9th one of the dates that was part of that 3-day set that was popular?
From the times I've went, I thought that it usually starts with just an evening event on Thursday, that Thursday is basically the travel day.
Is it?
Yeah, it has been in the past.
Yeah, it was, okay.
I have one conflict on the 6th of December. That's my SO board meeting. So.
Oh, yeah, that's also not a Wednesday. I'm sorry.
The only, and that would be that whole week. I haven't committed to going yet, but I guess, so we could wait since it's down the road a bit and see if it's one that warrants my participation. And then make a change, or we can
so
change
just,
it now.
If you have that conflict, having it on Wednesday wouldn't change anything.
The Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I'm sorry, I didn't notice that one on here. The reason that I put that one on Thursday was the organizational session. It would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I presume. I didn't really look at a calendar, but
okay.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, yeah. Why don't we just let it sit for now? We can change it later, because if that's the organizational session and stuff, there might be other reasons why I don't go to the MISO board meeting. So
if you can keep that on your radar screen, because I'm probably not going to remember.
Yeah,
that
no,
concern.
I will. I will. So I'll have to make a decision on that meeting at some point. So, okay, then.
And your concern on the 9th is? I haven't looked at that MARC notice, but my recollection is that it starts on Thursdays.
Okay. I wasn't 100% sure, but I thought that's in proximity to it.
And there, too, if it hits something, we'll have a little time we can move
right,
to.
Right.
I'm not seeing any other objections.
There's 3rd through the 5th or 10th through the 12th for those MARC events. So the 9th, I think, would be okay.
Okay, yep. Better yet.
And then I wanted to add something to scheduling.
Okay, well, these 9 are good then for now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then Brian had a work session on one call.
Policy guidelines related to one call violation, fine amounts.
I think Pat had said that maybe the words we should be using is damage prevention.
And penalty. Damage prevention and penalty guidelines. Right.
That's what we call the cases when we do the case.
Damage prevention penalty guidelines work session. Do you have a proposed date? No, we got the title. That's half the
battle. Yeah.
How about, I'll just start putting dates out and then we'll, June 28th, is that a possibility? Or actually, you know what, we don't have anything scheduled right now, do we, for the informal on the 20th? No, actually we do, never mind, 27th, that's.
28th works.
28th, morning, 10 o'clock?
I am tied up from 9 until noon.
Okay.
But we could do 8.
8, or we could go in the afternoon. I'm open in the afternoon.
8's my preference, but I can make the afternoon, too.
I have UGBTI Advisory Committee.
Let's just go with 8 o'clock, then.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So 8 o'clock, June 28th. That's a Thursday. Okay, and Julie, did you say you had another thing to add?
I did. Your favorite event of the year, the staff picnic. Surprised you hadn't put it on there yourself.
I guess it slipped my mind.
Plus, I understand you have a beet on potato salad now, Randy.
That's right.
Not too good of a shopper for that.
So in the any ideas, any preferences you guys have, do we want to do, I think in the last few years we've gone a little later, haven't we, almost into September?
I believe it was in September.
Is that too late?
Is
that better when people don't have the have as much going on? Staff is leaving the room. What does that mean?
The picnic is very popular.
Everybody's like, "Eh."
Everyone had a great time last year, even Randy.
Stacy, do you have thoughts from staff on when is better? Weeknights in the summer or fall?
Well. After Labor Day, we come in and we'll have a meeting on the Wednesday, the 5th.
Okay, and I'm just going to...
You know, so what about the 6th or something? I mean, assume nobody's got a vacation that whole week or something like that, so I just throw that one out.
I'm gone on the 6th and 7th, actually.
I'm just going to throw out as something else. What about, like, July 24th? That's a Tuesday night.
Gosh darn hot, then.
Well, that is kind of...
Are you a rancher? Do the cows not get tended to in July?
No. They do the tending to their calves.
We could... What about... Should we try to get that shelter? The nicer one where the picnic was, the pig roast?
It's not a bad idea in the event of
And then
rain,
maybe we should let
cost.
The... Yeah. Maybe what we are doing is backwards. Maybe we should see what dates that's available, and then see if we can find a time that...
I know that it is not available for the remainder of the summer. I tried to schedule some for Kelly Leben's campaign for the summer, and it's booked through September.
Oh, it is?
Every night.
Just about every night.
Just about.
Wow.
Let's see, though, if they've got a couple of nights.
Yeah. I could double-check again, but I do know that when I tried finding a time for him...
Through September,
that it was pretty well booked.
Why don't you see if there's any possibility?
Okay, and I'd be glad to.
And then we can put it onto the next agenda and set it. It's not gonna, if we're doing it in September, it's not going to matter if we do it this week or next week. So.
I'm open game for any time, whether it's if we can find a free evening in July or August or
The other good
or September.
Is the JC Park, which is up on Century Avenue.
Oh right.
Oh yeah.
Actually, that's what I do have for Kelly's. Fundraiser is there, and that's actually a pretty nice little facility. It's similar, but it's at JC Park, which is up north.
Just doesn't have the amusement park.
Yeah, it doesn't have
the kids. That's a great.
And we do have some
right
little kids in the
there. Yeah,
which would be fun. But it does. The little kids would probably be happy with the park there too. So
let's check on availability.
I can check on both for.
Yeah, that'd be good, Daryl. You can bring them to the next meeting.
So,
and I think the chairman gets to pick the menu.
Okay.
And make assignments accordingly.
yeah, Derek, check on that. And I'm going to make the first assignment that Julie should... work with you to, if there is a date, to bring, I mean, we can talk outside of meetings about scheduling things. And so, shout, if there's a date that's available, and you guys decide that you want to have it there as opposed to Sertoma, then let us know and make sure that date's open for us, and just go ahead and schedule
okay
it then.
So we don't wait 2 weeks.
So Daryl will get back to me with dates of the both of them. We'll settle on one, and he'll get back to you guys.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect. Okay. We are adjourned.